Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Renowned author Robert Eckert has delved into the depths of ancient history with his latest masterpiece, The Year of Five Emperors, Part 1, Pert Next. This meticulously researched and panoramic view of a pivotal area in mid-imperial Roman history offers readers an immersive experience of a society teetering on the edge of collapse. The Year of Five Emperors, Part 1, Pert Next, takes readers on a compelling journey. With its shifting viewpoints and captivating storytelling, Robert's book paints a vivid picture of power struggles, religious influences, and an intricate web of connections that shaped the Roman Empire during this tumultuous era. Robert has degrees in philosophy, law, and mathematics, and a lifelong interest in linguistics and history. He won a set of Encyclopedia Britannicas in the 7th grade for an essay on who the speakers of Proto-Indo-European might have been. In the 1970s, he transcribed the Tanakh, original Hebrew text of the Old Testament from the Leningrad Codex, into an ASC2 file with codes for the cantillations as well as vowel points and consonants. All online Hebrew OTs derive from this file. In 1980, he discovered an unexcavated archaeological site in Turkish Kurdistan. Robert currently tutors statistics and calculus in the Detroit area. And Robert Eckert, author of The Year of the Five Emperors, Part 1, Pert Next, is our guest on This Week in America. Robert, welcome to the program. Great to have you with us.
Yes, glad to be here.
I've confused some listeners by saying encyclopedias. They probably don't know what we're talking about. Do you still have right. those that you won in the 7th grade?
I still have those. Yes, they're down in the basement. I even look at them sometimes.
You know, that's interesting. You talk to people who have those, and they sort of sheepishly say, yeah, I have those. And yeah, occasionally I'll go down and take a peek at those. It's fascinating. What a job you've done with this book, The Year of Five Emperors, Part 1. Let's set the timeline for this. What was the Year of Five Emperors?
Well, it starts around midnight on New Year's Eve, right at the start of 193 of the Christian era, with the death of Emperor Commodus. His death is the end point of the movie Gladiator that you might know. There was a 1964 movie that also ended with a different version of how Commodus was killed. And that's okay because the chroniclers aren't very consistent about what happened. And I give my own take. But however it happened, Rome just wasn't ready for it. It was the first assassination in 100 years. They'd had the five good emperors who died in bed of old age, something that didn't usually happen in Rome. And there was the co-emperor, Lucius Verus, who was supposed to outlive Marcus Aurelius and take over from him, but he got the plague. So Marcus Aurelius left things to his biological son, Commodus, who was handsome and athletic and charismatic and a total psychopath. Which happened to Rome a lot, and usually the Roman bureaucracy could chug along with a bad emperor. But when he died, he'd wiped out most of his immediate family and kept doing away with officials who were competent because they might get too popular and outshine him.
Yes.
And so he left just this complete power vacuum. And so I'm fascinated by this year when five different people are trying to take power on different grounds of legitimacy. What you can see is how the old Roman society used to work, because it's still trying to work, but it's starting to break down.
Is this the start of the breakdown? Is this when this whole period began?
Yeah, I mean, there was one chronicler who said that with the reign of Commodus, the age of gold turned into rusty iron, and that was cited by Gibbon in his Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, is that this is where the slide started. But of course, you know, I mean, there had been previous signs of decay. Nero also wiped out his family and didn't leave any successor, and was followed by the Year of Four Emperors, when all of these legions would start hailing their commanders as emperor. And one chronicler said, a hitherto unknown feature of our constitution was revealed. emperors could be made somewhere other than the Senate in Rome. And practice came back in the year of five emperors. The Senate thought that they were in control, but some of the armed forces had somewhat different ideas. And so, I've broken down the year of five emperors into two pieces. First one's called Pertinax, and that was the Senate's choice. Now, he's this stodgy bureaucrat. The Senate elected him, and so he was in power, right?
Yes.
Well, the military wanted more money, and there's the choice of going deeper and deeper into debt or debasing the currency some more. Lucky that never happens in modern times, right?
Oh, exactly, yes.
Yeah, right.
Dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, right. And part two, Severus, is about, mostly it's about Septimius Severus, who is the military candidate. And I won't be really giving a spoiler when I say that the military candidate is the one who ends up winning. That's how things generally went in Roman history. Part two, Severus, that's coming out in the coming days. Part one has been out since July. There's still the old printing with both parts together, but that's 800 pages in one big slide.
Oh, yes, yes.
So the Bookside Press is reprinting it in two pieces, which is a little handier.
Yeah, a little more manageable, and that's Bookside Press. Their website is booksidepress.com, the publisher. Our guest in the program is the author of The Year of Five Emperors, Part 1, Pertinax, Robert Eckert. That's Eckert. That's important because to go to his website, you need his name, roberteckertbooks.com. Books, of course, available at Amazon, the usual places. Link on to Robert's website by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. It's interesting society at the time. You read on one page you've got polite conversations, at another page you've got violent outburst. It was a tumultuous period in Rome at the time, wasn't it?
Right. I mean, I told one friend that the atmosphere that I was trying to portray was a sort of a mix of Jane Austen and George Martin. That is, you have some like mannered conversations in lavish rooms, and everybody's being very polite to each other, acknowledging higher rank. Everybody has to show that they understand their place in the hierarchy and that they accept their place. And you come to see that they talk to each other this way because this is what keeps them from killing each other. But this year, it's not quite working anymore. And there's all of these breakouts of serious violence all throughout the year, and most of my characters end up dead by the end of the story. And it isn't that I liked killing off my characters. This is just the way that it went. It was a very, very deadly year in the history. And I try to show how this is working at all levels of the society. I have a huge number of characters from the imperial contenders down to the slaves and the barbarians looking at what's going on from outside the empire. I break down the book into little short chapters, each one sort of like a short story with maybe a little twist at the end. You sort of jump around from viewpoint to viewpoint, so you get the big picture, sort of a mosaic made out of little tiles of what's going on all around the empire.
Yes. You do a remarkable job of making us feel like we're there. A great storyteller. We suddenly are going back in time and can almost feel and sense what's happening. Was that like that for you as you were writing it? Did you mentally go back to that era?
I was very much concentrating on the atmospherics.
Yes.
More even more so than on the story. I mean, the story, of course, is constrained by the history, but because the chronicles are rather contradictory, I did have my choices about what I was going to consider the facts. And sometimes I would change the facts for a better story, because what I really wanted to give was the atmosphere, how it felt, or as best we can reconstruct it to live in that time. And there are many things that are very familiar, and there are many things that are very alien. I mean, this was still a period when most people's beliefs about the world were governed by a high level of superstition. They were very afraid of ghosts all the time. Everybody has lots of dead people in their life. Half the children die young, the women die in childbirth, the men die in war or street violence. Everybody has missing people in their life, and they don't talk about it. This is a big part of the atmosphere of what's going on, is that they don't talk about their sorrows. They don't talk about the missing people. And not just because it's distressing to them, but because it's terrible bad luck to mention the dead. That's inviting the ghosts back into this world where they might do you harm.
Yes.
And take you back with them. You know, I mean, this is the kind of mindset that most of them live with. Now, of course, there was other religious tendencies at the time. My viewpoint character is a Stoic. He believes in the philosophy of Marcus Aurelius, that the gods are very lofty and they don't take much interest in our day-to-day affairs. We have to govern ourselves, find pleasure where we can, knowing that it's fleeting, endure suffering, understanding that that's temporary also, and develop this attitude of calm and unperturbed philosophical
yes.
outlook on everything. But of course, because of the Jane Austen-ness of the story, I also have to have him have a daughter that he's trying to get married, who is not quite as philosophically calm about everything as he tries to make her, because I wanted to explore, you know, what goes into arranged marriages in the upper classes, and also the less formal relationships among the lower classes, and the role of women in the society. They're supposed to be very, very subordinate. The traditional Roman attitude toward women was just very suppressive. They have wedding rings made of iron, which are symbolic slave shackles, to indicate that the wife is the property of the husband. And the traditional wedding, the bridegroom comes and kidnaps the bride. Of course, it's all play acting now, but he was standing for a marriage by capture, and they would sing this song about the Romans grabbing the Sabine women, and the Sabine women deciding, well, they may be rapists, but they're not such bad husbands. I mean, the women were just supposed to put up with being dominated. Well, of course, by this period of history, this isn't true. The women have their ways of working their will, and I tried to show that as well.
You do such an excellent job of the layers that you mentioned, the slaves, the women, the barbarians. Right. Robert Eckert is our guest on the program. That's Eckert. His website is roberteckertbooks.com. This book published by Bookside Press, their website booksidepress.com, available Amazon, the usual places. The book we're focusing on today, The Year of Five Emperors, Part 1, Pertinax, by Robert Eckert, our guest on the program. Time is going by so quickly. Let's talk a little bit about philosophy and religion and Christianity and what it was like to be a Christian during this period.
Well, it was an unusual sort of lull in the relationships between the state and the Christian movement. Now, Emperor Trajan had laid down a don't ask, don't tell policy. He wrote to the governor of Asia saying, you should condemn Christians if they make a public scene of disrespect to the gods, but you should not rely on secret informers. You should not try to dig up the underground. And this sometimes held and sometimes didn't. There had been some persecutions a few years before the Year of Five Emperors, and there would be persecutions after. But right around this time, it was back to a sort of don't ask, don't tell, where if you weren't public about your Christianity, you would be left alone, as long as you didn't make a scene about it. Public preaching was completely forbidden. And that would get you into trouble. And the authorities really knew who the Christian leaders were. One of the interesting things about this year is that the Bishop of Rome, Victor, didn't yet use the word Pope, but he was very influential, not just in the Italian church, but in the Western church in general. He was from the same hometown as Septimius Severus, the main military candidate for emperor. And it wasn't that large a city, and they were fairly close to age, so I'm assuming they knew each other. I don't find anything in the chronicles to substantiate that they knew each other, but for purposes of our story, they know each other, and so they have some rather testy interactions with each other, where sort of setting down what are the rules, what can you get away with, what can you not get away with. And of course there's also the Jews, who are under suspicion because they'd rebelled against the Roman Empire in previous periods, and they're not exactly persecuted either, but if they try to make converts, this is something that the authorities frown upon, just as with the Christians. And then there were still Samaritans at this time. One of the places where I falsify the history, I have a Vicennius Niger, who is the sort of the populist candidate for emperor. He was from not a very distinguished social background, but very popular. He was the governor of Syria, in fact. I have Commodus transfer him from Syria to Egypt because he was trying to launch an Eastern campaign, and he might win a triumph, and that might make him more popular than Commodus. So Commodus yanks him out of there. That didn't happen to Vicennius, but it was the kind of thing that did happen, so yes. I wanted to show it. And also it gave me an excuse to have him march from Egypt to Syria and meet the Samaritans of Neapolis, which is now Nablus in the West Bank, because Septimius Severus would later burn their whole city down because they raised troops for Vicennius Niger. They really appreciated his generosity to them. And the chronicles don't explain exactly why or when he was generous to the Samaritans, but I sort of go out of my way to make that happen. Well, you know, I mean, this was sort of the occasion in which the Samaritans were largely wiped out, and they've been a very minor sect since. But they had been there for a while, and there's also just all kinds of other cult leaders around the time. I mean, there's all kinds of charlatans offering their own sort of takes on how the universe works, because the old paganism with all of this superstition about ghosts and omens and all of these nature gods, it wasn't really working for the people anymore. And this is part of why movements like Christianity were getting a lot of converts, because people just weren't feeling very satisfied with either the metaphysical or the moral explanations that they were given about how the world worked or how they should be behaving. And so this obviously left a lot of openings for people to make up new religions and pretend to be somebody important. And there's a lot of that going on too. And this is one of the things where again you can say, well, that hasn't changed very much. Because times of uncertainty, of course, really lend themselves to this. And
Yes.
as far as a lot of the upper crust Romans were concerned, Christianity was just one of these silly little cults. Somebody pretending to be important, and so they have a very contemptuous understanding of what Christianity was about. And of course, was going on was a lack of communication, because the Christians were being told to keep their heads down. So you only found out about it,
Oh, yes.
if you happen to meet somebody. They would have little signs that they would make to each other for secret recognition codes. Because it was very much an underground movement
Yes.
at the time, even if somewhat tolerated compared to other periods
It's
of more.
interesting, the balance that you display between the empire and society. It's such a fascinating read. I got a minute or so left here. Would you say this is society on the brink of transformation or society on the edge of collapse? Which category do you see this falling into, or maybe both?
Well, the Roman society did transform for a while after the year of five emperors, but then a couple decades later came the year of six emperors, which started a whole century when military coups were just chronic, one right after the other. So, the new society didn't exactly work.
Yes.
And the old society was very much swept away by after the year of five emperors. The Senate really didn't have much influence anymore. It was sort of like the Central Committee in North Korea. Its job was to praise the dear leader, and it didn't do much on its own anymore. Rome became more nakedly a military dictatorship. And it had always, of course, had a large aspect of military dictatorship,
Yes.
but it started to shed any disguise of being anything else after this. And so it was a very destabilizing turning point.
Well, it's a fascinating era that you bring alive so well in the book, The Year of Five Emperors, Part One, Pertinax. Available now. Our guest is Robert Eckert, Eckert. His website is roberteckertbooks.com, published by Bookside Press. Their website, booksidepress.com. Books, of course, available Amazon, all of the usual places. And Robert, you're saying that very shortly we'll see part two, correct? That will be out
That's
very soon.
right. It should be coming out within days, actually. Some there I'm supposed to get my author's copy today.
Oh, fantastic.
The proof is done. The printing has begun.
What are you working on now?
I do have a sequel, The Baths of Caracalla. This is after Septimius Severus has reigned for a while, and talking about the upbringing of his son, who did more damage to the empire. It's kind of a dark. It's a darker book even than The Year of Five Emperors, because he's a rather dark character. But I try to make him understandable, if
Well, you
not
do that
likable.
with all of your characters. Before you kill them, you make them understandable, and we can really get a sense of who they are and their place in history and what they are attempting to do. Robert, it's been a pleasure having you on the program. Look forward to book two. Could be out any time. The sequel. Hopefully, we'll have a chance to talk about that. The book is The Year of the Five Emperors, Part One, Pertinax, by Robert Eckert. Robert, a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Just keep pulling out those encyclopedias and dusting them off and seeing what's still relevant today. Robert Eckert, our guest on the program, the book, The Year of Five Emperors, Part 1. All of this, of course, and a link directly to Robert's website at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And we're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.